We were coming up to the centenary of World War One in October 2014, and we decided let's have a look at what we could contribute from the work that we're doing to salute the work that the Aboriginal volunteers had done in World War One. So we started to have a look for some names. I think there'd been about 60 that had been acknowledged up to that point, and we just kept finding these names that hadn't been included. So we thought, well, we need to document their attempt to enlist. Some of them, I think it was around 80, managed to actually go and serve overseas, but a number of them were rejected because of their race or, in some instances, health. But there was really nothing wrong with them. They were playing football. They were working. They were, you know, pretty strong people. But they were still rejected. So we decided we'd put something together, and that's how the book story started.
It's clearly meticulously researched, and you told me earlier that every sentence was checked and checked again. What
Absolutely.
Process did you go through to gather these stories and to ensure their accuracy?
Well, we didn't just look at a piece of, you know, go and search, and we found a piece of paper and everything was there. We just, you know, documented it. Mm. It was more a triangulated research project, which had three key aspects to it. So we had the historical records that we had to interrogate. Then we had to look at, you know, find the community connections to the stories. And then there were the war records that we used as well. So, you know, we had to triangulate the whole three to come up with the stories that we put together. We started looking at the digital records records that were available across Australia through, you know, Trove, through the National Archives of Australia, the National Library, and then we looked at all other cultural institutions that might have the information that we could use, mm-hmm. and then we pulled it all together. And just on that, I think we were really lucky with the cultural institutions that did have digital records. That was critical for us, and I'm hoping that over time that people realise we need those resources to digitise records. Kids today are online. That's where they're reading the stories. So we need to, look at putting a lot of information online so that's accessed by everyone.
Yeah, bring them to the kids.
Absolutely.
There are some remarkable stories in this book. Can you tell us one that stayed with you?
Well, there's a lot that have stayed, but I suppose if I looked at two of the stories that were a little bit different from each other, one was the story of Jimmy Melbourne. And Jimmy Melbourne was the first Aboriginal West Australian man to play waffle. And I think yesterday West Perth and Claremont played for the Jimmy Melbourne Cup. Mm. Now, Jimmy went to Gallipoli. He served at Gallipoli. He was injured and had to come home and ended up, I think, going to live in Melbourne, where he was quite a poor man and found it difficult to find work. Unfortunately, in the mid-1930s, he was murdered by his landlord, and who was charged with manslaughter. But in finding his story, we located that his grave was in Melbourne, and it didn't have a headstone. So he was a Ballardong man from York. So we worked with the Ballardong elders and sought permission to mine or get some of the rock from Ballardong country to be used for his headstone. And we trucked it over there to Melbourne. And there was, I think, Kevin Sheedy and Sid Jackson, another famous West Australian footballer, and one of the Eagles, one of the Dockers, at a memorial service that we had there when we had the headstone put on his grave. So now he has a marked grave.
Wow. So your research is really having ripple effects in other ways.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah. Absolutely.
There's even a love story in this book.
Oh, the love story. That was an interesting. It was Charles Hutchins, and Charles Hutchins also served at Gallipoli, but he went on to serve on the Western Front. He was badly injured and ended up in England, where he was in hospital for nearly a year. In that time, he met Rose, who volunteered every Sunday, and they fell in love. And to cut a long story short, he wanted to marry her, and her father said, "No, you're not marrying a native." And eventually, that they got him to say yes, and they were married. And he was supposed to be on a ship coming home, and he was on his honeymoon, so he was docked 45 days' pay, and he ended up coming home. She followed him 6 months later. They had one child. She met a serviceman at the embassy ballroom in Perth during World War II. She was married and went to live in the East. And then they stayed here when they had their grandchild. They moved in with the daughter and her husband. And he died at the age of 59. He was quite young when he died. And the wife, Rose, would not... he'd actually said that he wanted his ashes to go into the Pacific Ocean so that the tides would bring them home to country. And his wife couldn't do that because, you know, she needed a grave to go to. Mm. So when she died, the family brought both lots of ashes back to Perth and scattered them in the Derbal Yerrigan, the Swan River. So it's quite a lovely story, that one, I think. Mm.
What has it meant to the descendants of these men in the book to now have their stories in print?
It's been an amazing journey with the families. We've cried with families. We've hugged. We've found out information for them that they have been so appreciative of that they had no idea. Some of them didn't even know they had Aboriginal ancestry because the family had tried to hide it because of the how they had been treated. Mm. So they didn't want the next generation to be treated that way. But they were really pleased. Their ancestors had finally received the recognition and acknowledgement from the government that they deserved. It also, you know, resurrected memories of loss, but it generated such a sense of pride in the families. You know, I suppose it was like a reconnection and righting the wrongs. You know, I suppose it's the government's contribution to truth telling in a way, that the stories that were written. But it's been amazing. I mean, we've reunited families that didn't even know they were, related. You know, that they'd been broken, and broken men led to broken families, a broken culture and identity that they had to hide. So, yeah, it's been an amazing journey. We still talk to a lot of the families now. We catch up, and you know, sometimes they find new information when they're looking through the old boxes in the back shed. Yeah. That they share with us, but it's been an amazing, amazing, amazing journey for us as a team putting the book together, but also for the families that have been involved.
Yeah, it's a great gift for them and a really important read for everybody else. If people want to have a look, can you tell us where we can find the book?
Well, the book is available through the Art Gallery of Western Australia and the museum. They're available for purchase and in the State Library as well. But otherwise, they can be downloaded if they go to the Department of Local Government, Sport and Cultural Industries website and just type in No Less Worthy. They can actually download a copy of the book there.
Anna White, thank you very much for your time this evening.
No problem.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much, Charlotte. Thank you very much. Bye.